How you doing tonight, Redneck?
Not too bad. How about yourself, Pastor?
I'm doing pretty good. Today was a lazy day. It was kind of nice just to be able to sit around the house and play some Madden, play with my son, play with the dogs, you know.
That's always a nice day. I know it's it was kind of a little crazy around here as far as all of the everything going on, because we're supposed to be getting like 1 to 3 more inches of snow tonight. So we went out and about and did a little bit of grocery shopping just to make sure we didn't necessarily need anything, but there's a few things that we wanted to stock up on, and there was a couple of things that we had ran out of. So we went to Costco and stuff, and oh Lord help me, when you go in Costco when there's a snowstorm coming, it's like,
oh my gosh, it's the worst.
Oh right. It's nuts.
Any store, like the Midwest thing to do when there's snow coming is you go buy the milk, eggs, and bread. You may not need it, but you go buy the milk, eggs, and bread.
Right, and then you hear people complaining, why is everybody buying up all the milk, eggs, and bread? There's none for me.
Right.
I just came 5 minutes too late, and everybody else already bought everything up.
Right. And then what even makes it worse is that then about 2 weeks later, you hear everyone complaining about all the milk they're throwing away because they bought 6 gallons of milk when the snow was coming.
Right. It's like, did you think you were going to literally be trapped for that long?
I mean, I'm telling you, if you're going to be trapped for that long, your milk's not going to be good. Buy what you can use within a week. Come on now.
Right. It's not like Snowmageddon's coming. I swear people think that Snowmageddon is on the verge.
Snowmageddon, Snowpocalypse, yep. Whatever you want to go with it, man. Yeah. I will say we got about 11 inches of snow the other day here, and everyone, I swear, thought it was the snowpocalypse. People in this area are just not used to that much snow, at least not at all at one time.
Yeah. We've had it just piled on, so like 11 inches of snow has just sat around in piles regularly in this area.
Oh yeah, no, that's definitely not the normal case around here anyway.
Yeah,
normally it's, we get a, at least from what I can say, normal, you know, I've been here a year and a half or so, but I can say the snow, it snows, it melts, it snows, it melts, it snows. And you get where I'm going with this. Anything new since last week, Redneck?
I mean, not a whole lot. Just, you know, everyday life, you know, going through the craziness that is our world out there.
Yeah, I think we can definitely say that this world has gone a little crazy, but you know, nothing that we can't manage, I hope. Or I should say, nothing that we can't manage with the right help anyway. So
yeah, definitely.
But I'm thinking back through last time, and I looked over the notes, and I listened back through the podcast, and I can honestly say that I don't think we did anything too crazy wrong. I mean, I think we fixed most of our mistakes right there. Did you catch anything I didn't?
Nothing that I can think of. You know, it's, I mean, not that I can remember, at least. Not that we've gotten any, you know, messages screaming or yelling at us, at least.
That's right. I mean, no one's emailed us to tell us how wrong we are, so we can't be that wrong, right? I
mean, right.
But all joking aside, let's just jump right into this week, because there's some stuff this week that we're going to talk about that could possibly lead to a disagreement of sorts and some discussion. So
yes, but, for sure.
this first one I'm hopping in here is that Russia has a new bird flu, H5N8. This was found in a poultry plant in Russia. 7 people have become infected with it, and all 7 work in the poultry plant. What they're saying is right now from all the research and what they can tell, it's not transmittable human to human. So it looks like they have to get it from the birds, from the chickens or whatever poultry they'd be in the plant. However, it does bring up some interesting conversations, right? Because we both were in high school, I believe, when H1N1 came around, right?
Yep, the first big that was swine flu for H1N1.
Oh yeah, you're right.
There was another form of bird flu. Let's see, the bird flu originally, let's see, the H5N8 is this new one, H5N1.
Well, so this is, the eighth variation that they found of this. You're right, H1N1 was the swine flu. I apologize. I appreciate you catching my mistake right there off the bat. No angry emails yet, anyway. but all joking aside, it doesn't appear that this is... transmittal from person to person. It looks like you have to get it from the birds. But what's really interesting is that I think people, when they hear things or see things like this, they automatically go back to like the swine flu, and they go back to right now we're literally in the middle of a pandemic. So I think they even look at COVID and go, oh geez, are we gonna have another like mini pandemic in the midst of this major pandemic?
Yeah, that's, the thing is when you look at it, the avian flu in general, here in the U.S., like the original one, not this mutated one, there's fewer than 1,000 U.S. cases per year. So if you look, unless this one, and clearly they don't seem to be afraid that it's going to be this crazy outbreak, and they think it's only going to be from these birds to the individuals who interact with the specific birds that have this strange. The thing is it's also like, yes, it has some complications, but it's also a little more treatable, and they know a little bit more about the original avian flu. So hopefully they can use some of that to help with this. But I mean, if they've recovered, I'm looking here and according to this is the CDC, the avian flu, the H5N1, typically, symptoms begin within 2 to 8 days and can seem like the common flu: cough, fever, sore throat, muscle aches, headaches, and shortness of breath. But the disease can carry a high mortality rate in humans. And some antiviral drugs, if taken within 2 days of symptoms, may help.
Yeah, so I mean, that's definitely something to keep in mind. I think that this just is one of those things that people will, be a little cautious of. The one thing that is really good about this as well is, like you said, that we do know quite a bit about it already. The other thing that's really good with this is that it's not appearing to be at quite as deadly as, COVID-19 is, because all 7 people that got it from this plant are healthy and feeling well, according to this article from BBC. And it, look, it's Russia, right? I'm not trying to poke fun at Russia. I'm sure they know what they're doing on some things when it comes to like nuclear. What'd you say?
I said knowing ish.
Yeah. I'm all joking aside, like, their healthcare, I don't know a ton about, but I can't imagine it's great. It may be way better than I know, but I imagine by the time you get a world of scientists looking at this thing, it's going to be almost a non-issue. But I will say, what they did mention is that because it's not so contagious, within the article they alluded to, because it's not as contagious and because they know exactly, like you said, they've seen strains of this, maybe not this exact strain, but it gives us the ability to get out in front of it. And it's definitely not going to be like the next pandemic, but it's just kind of interesting to see that this is popping up in the midst of a pandemic, because you know these guys, when they got sick, were like, oh no, we have COVID-19, you know? So.
Oh, yeah, and especially with all of the stigma around, you know, everything with COVID-19, I'm sure they were so worried about, you know, what am I going to do to be able to make the money when I'm going to be out of work for, you know, 10 to 14 days, depending upon your country and their quarantine rules. And then I know, you know, it just depends upon what all of the laws are or rulings or whatever are going on in whatever country. And I'm sure Russia has their own. I don't know what their quarantine laws are, but, you know, it's one of those things that I'm sure they were worried about that a lot. But I'm sure it was almost a, wait, I have what? It's not COVID?
Right. Yeah. Bird flu from, like, you know, several years ago. Anyway, you're right. I'm sure it was fascinating for them, but that's pretty much all I have on that one. You know, it's interesting to see pop up in the midst of a pandemic. But I mean, hopefully it's going to be just at that. And, you know, these seven people have dealt with it and move on from there. So.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, you were just complaining not too long ago about not getting that much snow. And then I see in the news all these Texans down here whining, complaining about a little bit of stinking cold. I mean, come on now. But I mean,
well,
just kidding, Texas. We love you. But, you know, there is this cold snap, this polar vortex that just hit that region and has really kind of wreaked havoc on their power grid.
Redneck, don't forget, everything's bigger in Texas. Okay? Cold snaps, their outages, their need for support for their citizens. And don't forget, I'm sorry, I'm done.
You know what's funny? I keep seeing these memes on Facebook that are literally, you see this 4x4 F-250 in the ditch with bald tires, and then it says, in Texas when it snows, and then it's got the truck in the ditch, and then it's got a Honda Civic in like 12 inches of snow blasting down the interstate, and it says in Iowa when we get 12 inches of snow on a regular basis, and this is our third winter and our piece of junk Honda.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I will say the further south you get, the less people can handle snow.
Yeah.
Because it's just not part of their day-to-day or their yearly routine, right?
Well, yeah, like, they don't have the infrastructure for it.
For sure. I mean, I sat in a meeting a while back that they were talking about the windmills and the amount of, like, power structure, or the amount of power that they add to the power grids. Yeah. And they're talking about different things like that. And they're talking about this cold snap actually came up in that meeting. And they were talking about, like, how the windmills have specific protocols and have, like, specific safety measures put in areas where it's going to be cold and snowy. And that in the south, you just don't have those things with the windmills. They just have, you know, they don't need the things that go with them.
No, and that's the thing is their infrastructure is just not set up for it, because, you know, the thing is they don't deal with this. The last time they dealt with this was over 10 plus years ago, if I remember right, when I was looking at it, you know, the last true Arctic blast cold snap like this that hit Texas.
Yeah, and I mean, all this to say, like, we joke about it, but this is a serious problem for Texas right now. Like,
yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely hurt a lot of their, you know, infrastructure as far as their natural gas, their coal, their all of that. They've had to power up these plants, and then now they're having all of these rolling blackouts for a while because of they don't have enough power. Because the problem is, you know, some of these things they can't run because of, you know, they're not winterized, they're not whatever.
Right.
And then the other issue is when it comes to like heating and all of that, natural gas gets priority for heating and that kind of stuff. And so the problem becomes it gets diverted in different areas and stuff, and so it makes it that much harder for the power plants to get that natural gas or the coal or whatever is going towards the heating, and it's just piled on them and made this such a worse issue. So I was reading. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
No, you're good. I was gonna say the other thing to keep in mind that Texas has their own power grid.
Yep.
So they're not connected with anybody else. So, like, when Texas has these rolling blackouts, like, they can't draw power in from their neighboring states, or they can't, like, mm-hmm. you know, make that agreement to where, like, I know, I want to say there's a few states that have, like, agreements that, like, okay, if something goes wrong with our power grid, we can pull power from you, or you can pull
yep.
power from us, you know, those kind of things. And because most states have I don't want to say a federal power grid, but they're not just their own power grid like Texas is, like,
right,
Texas kind of like made their own thing and said don't touch us,
so yeah, so
the state.
So I kind of understand like what Texas's thought is behind that, because the thing is when you really dig into it, what they're trying to do is they're trying to be self-sufficient. So because mm-hmm. you know, Texas is a state is always talking secession all the time. It doesn't matter what's going on. So the more independent they can be as a state, the better. And the thing is if you go down to right. Texas or talk to anybody from Texas, they will tell you they are from Texas because
oh, for sure.
they are proud to be from Texas, which, you know, okay, I'm cool. You know, I'm an Iwegian where I'm proud to be from Iowa, you know? And
oh, I know all I owe. I owe.
Yep, exactly.
Sorry.
Oh, getting a musical from Pastor over there.
That's right.
But
if anyone caught that, welcome to the realm of musical nerds.
Yes, very much so. But you know, the thing is FEMA. I did see the article that I have here is talking about that Biden announced a declaration of disaster for Texas amid all the severe weather that's going on down there. With this, before he even announced this, FEMA, or the Federal Emergency Management Agency, already supplied 60 generators to support critical sites such as hospitals and water facilities, 729,000 liters of water, more than 60,000 blankets being of wool and cotton mix, and over 225,000 meals just before Biden even got off his thumbs and decided to declare an emergency. You have something to say?
Yeah, so I get that. Like, I get where you're get off his thumbs thing is coming from. But at the same time, it's one of those things where at the same time, if the state is going to try and secede every time they
right.
like, I'd be cautious to do anything too, because like, you could just upset Texas and be like, and Biden can be like, okay, we're declaring a state of emergency so we can help Texas more. And Texas would be like, we don't want your help. We got our guns. We got our pickups. And we got our beer and we're good to go.
I mean, yeah. It's
essentially like your dream state, man.
Kind of, sort of. I mean, it's too hot. I mean, not right now, yeah. Clearly, but.
That's mean. Oh, gosh.
Oh.
I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at you. That's mean. Anyway, so yes, Biden declared a state of emergency. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, and he's also saying that he's hoping soon to visit Texas as long as his trip would not be a, quote, burden on the state. Which, okay, you know, I can respect that. And then I did see also when I was reading this article from The Hill, that the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, he has called for an investigation of the state's main power grid. The main power grid is controlled by what is called ERCOT, or the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, because like you were saying, they are on their own power island, essentially, is what they are down there.
Correct.
Because they're separated from the east and the west. So, you know, and then he also with that, caught by doing so, he caught some flack, for advocating for winterizing of the state's wind turbines and the natural gas, pipelines, because that process was recommended 10 years ago.
When they first went through something like this.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, the thing is had they listened back 10 years ago when they were told when this last cold snap, hey, maybe you should do something about that. And they had what? The same issues of rolling blackouts, power loss, the same kind of issues they had. But all of a sudden, oh, wait, we need to winterize this stuff. We need to do better. Wait, weren't you guys told 10 years ago to do this? And then he proceeds to blame everything on the Green New Deal. That's what I don't understand, is he's saying we need to winterize this and make everything better, but it's the Green New Deal's fault.
What's the Green New Deal?
The Green New Deal is the big initiative in Congress to go more towards renewable fuels and stuff like that. And those kind of, there's a lot more in it. There's a lot more, you know, nuts and bolts and grit into it, but.
So essentially it's the push to go towards like wind turbines and hydropower and different things like that. Okay.
Yep. Clean energy. Yep.
I got you. That, I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, I don't know why you would blame it on that. I mean,
it's not even a proposal that has even really came much in Texas. Texas really hasn't done much with it as a state, so it's not even something that they really, how can he really blame it when it's not something that's even going on in Texas that much?
So I can't speak to any of that because I have no idea what's going on in Texas half the time, because they really just do their own thing. Like, I swear they don't even want news reporters down there. I jokingly say that. But in all seriousness though, like, I kind of get both sides of things, right? Because if you're so used to being warm that, you know, your cold temperatures are like 50 degrees and you're wearing sweaters when the rest of, you know, at least the northern U.S. states are like 50 degrees, it's time to bring out the shorts and flip-flops, man.
Right.
When you're used to that, the cold, quote unquote, cold snaps being 50 degrees at the most, 40 degrees, you know, like winterizing things seems silly. But at the same time, on the off chance that this would happen, like, it also makes sense at the same time. I don't know. I don't know how long this person has been governor either. I don't know if he's like Terry Branstad in Iowa, where he just was governor and then governor and then governor and then governor and then not governor and then governor and then, you know, so, but if it was him 10 years ago, yeah, this is his problem. If it wasn't him, at the same time, like, it's not his administration, then
he was elected governor in 2014.
Yeah, so he would have been 3 years after this happened. I don't know. It just depends. My thing is that I get where he's coming from, like, because I'm sure winterizing things is not going to be cheap, right?
Right.
In Texas, I'm sure you're probably talking millions of dollars to winterize all this. So millions of dollars spent on this when you have a chance it's going to happen once every 10 years. But I will say a lot of people are suffering because they didn't. So.
Right. That's the thing is that a lot of flack is going to be caught on their politicians, the governor.
For
and especially the next person Really, Ted Cruz, Cancun? Really? Come on, man. Like, you just load your family up in your nice little jet and go down to where it's nice and sunny and warm while everybody else is freezing their tuchus off in Texas with snow and pipes bursting. And you just take your family and jet set off to Mexico.
So I did see something about that, and I saw something that he blamed his daughter as well, like it was her birthday or something like that. I don't know why he
Okay,
blamed his daughter, but he
send
blamed his
them and
daughter.
keep your butt there and get your butt to work.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean that was an interesting move on his part. But I mean, it's the Nancy Pelosi thing, right? Like, okay, no one go into salons. No one go into salons. No one. I'm gonna go get my hair cut in the salon.
Gavin Newsom with the French restaurant that he went to a
Yeah.
birthday party, and after he just said nobody can go anywhere and dining is forbidden. You
Right. Oh,
know?
but I'm gonna go into this fancy restaurant. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we see it with politicians all the time, and you know, we talk about this all the time, how politicians aren't working for us anymore. They're working for themselves. They're working for their bottom line. And look, I don't know if Ted Cruz is that kind of politician, but from what he's showing here, he is. So.
Yeah, I just, like I said, that I couldn't believe that. All I could think was, really? Like, how? I hope that he's not really hoping that this is going to just be swept under the rug, because with all of the controversy with everything going on, I don't think they're gonna let him just sweep this under the rug, and I think it could definitely hurt him in his next election.
Yeah, well, I definitely think it's going to come up again in his next election. The one thing I will say is that the only way it'll hurt him in his next election, coming from Texas, though, is if they have another Republican running against him.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, let's see, Ted Cruz, I wonder. Yeah, I don't know. I could see that. Texas, there are some blue areas though, if you really look at
Right,
it.
like Houston.
Right,
Houston is
and
somewhat
Dallas Fort
bluer.
Worth.
Yeah, but the thing is, most of Texas, though, most of Texas is a very, very Republican state. And I mean, I don't mean that as in like they would never vote, a Democrat in, but what I'm saying is that most of the time, if you're a Republican in Texan, you could be look. You could be just about as smart as my dumb dog and get the votes in Texas. And when I say my dog is dumb, I mean she chews on rocks, y'all. I love her to death, but she's not smart.
Well, and the thing is, I could definitely see though where so he's in the 21st district of Texas, and when you look at where the 21st district is, it covers just around north of San Antonio. And it kind of is just south of Austin. So there is some city area in there. You know, the thing is
Yeah.
there could be some option where he might end up really hurting himself with this move.
Well, that's true. And I do think so either way, I think he's going to hurt himself because people are going to cry accountability and be able to and say, well, like, what are you going to do for those who can't afford just to fly to Cancun? And I think people are going to want answers for sure. I think we often, as an American people and an American votership, have such a short memory of things like this, though. I mean, it's really kind of a sad thing because you look at this and what we're going to do, what happens, we're going to move on. The American people are going to see this. They're going to move on to the next horrible thing that the next politician does, right? So, hypothetically, if Joe Biden, if the economy crashes, people are going to be screaming for Joe Biden's head. And it could have nothing to do with him, but it's people are gonna scream for his head either way. And I think you'll see the exact same thing here. I think you'll see people have the short-term memory. I think you'll see people wait for the next Texas representative to make a big mistake, their Republican elected official to vote Democrat, something like that. And you'll see a lot of people get angry at them and forget that Ted Cruz went to Cancun. The other thing is, who says he didn't have this vacation planned forever?
Right. Yeah, I know. That's the thing is like, you know, that's one thing. Being in the limelight like that, though, even if you had the vacation planned, you got to kind of look. And I understand, you know, you want to be there for your family. You want to, but you are in the national spotlight. You should have known that hopping on that plane and going down to where it was warm while your constituents are freezing their butts off was not going to go over well.
So I agree. It's not going to go over well. But at the same time, like one of my mentors always told me, you'll be okay if you go God first, family second, job third.
Right.
And what that means is that, and for anyone who's not religious who would be listening to this, like, you know, then you can just say family first, job second. But for God first, like, God needs to be the center of your life, needs to be the person you're looking to for direction. Then you need to take care of your family, and then your job can come, right?
Right.
And that's one of the things that I think, even if Ted Cruz is doing that, if he's putting his family first, like I said earlier, they blamed it on his daughter. I don't know necessarily blamed is the right word, but I'm sure it was something with her, you know. So I don't know all the facts with it behind this clearly, but I do think you're right. You do have to be kind of careful if you're in the limelight as much as he is, because Ted Cruz famously goes against the grain, especially when it comes to opposing Democrats.
Right, and that's where I say he has to watch himself in that motive, especially if he wants to continue being where he's at, because doing things like that is not going to continue it. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that I understand, you know, because for myself, in my position, I don't have anybody watching me and what I do other than, you know, my supervisor, my boss, all that kind of thing. But, you know, I don't have, you know, the national spotlight and the media watching every little thing that I do. So for me, if I want to say, oh, you know what, I'm going to leave 4 hours early today and I got some vacation time and I'm going to take my wife and we're going to go cruise on down to Tennessee somewhere and take the weekend and, you know, whatever.
Going to go down where it's warmer anyway.
Right, exactly. Well, not right now. I mean, right now, the only place you can do that is go to Florida and then
Arizona.
I mean, Arizona, but did you see, I saw that map. It was National Hate Florida Day because the only part that was warm and above like 50 degrees was Florida. Like the rest of the United States was like 30s, 40s, maybe 50s. And then you had Florida down there in like the 60s, 70s, down south in the 90s. And it was like, everybody hate Florida Day.
Yeah, but I mean, I bet if you went far enough south into Texas, you probably had some warm
weather
too. So, but no, I this is an interesting thing, and all that to say, for me, my heart breaks for all those who've been hurt by this, and I pray for a quick resolution to it.
Yeah, for sure, and I just hope that with everything going on that they will be able to, with this disaster stuff that Biden just did declare. I know in the article when I was reading, it did say that it will allow people to apply for some funding to be able to help with some of the issues that have happened from this. And it'll allow them to be able to help get back on their feet and normal after everything that has happened.
Yeah, and I mean, that's all you can hope for, really, right? I mean,
yeah, definitely. So, and well, yeah, my heart definitely goes out to them, and I hope everybody stays safe and warm, and, you know, that just, you know, make it through it, and then maybe they can. For myself, I if it were me in a situation like this, I would look at it as if I'm, what can I do so that the next time this something like this happens, my life is going to be better. For instance, if I own a house and rolling blackouts are happening, maybe I need to look at what it would cost to put something like a solar generator on my house that I could be self-sufficient yeah. with, or a, you know, a backup gas diesel generator. If I, mm-hmm. they even make home wind turbines that are generator, electric generator wind turbines for your house too. So the thing is yeah. if it were me, I'd be looking at doing things like that, and I just hope everybody stays safe and made it through yeah. it all right. So,
yeah, I agree. Well, we're gonna go on. I think we're at a spot. So this is where I think we'll probably have some discussion mm-hmm. with this, because historically we've established that we both like guns. We both think that gun ownership is a good thing. However, sometimes we disagree on the way that things should be done, right? Anyway, so we might get into some of that, but the story comes from Louisiana, where three people were killed and two were injured in a shooting at a gun store. And what appears that happened, according to the sheriff, is that the gunman came in and started opening fire and ended up injuring two people fatally. And then, as you would expect in a gun store, patrons fired back and ended up. Now, it appears that there were two additional injuries. The sheriff didn't say two non-life threatening injuries, excuse me. Sheriff didn't say if it was from the original gunman or if it was mm-hmm. from the returned fire. There's no real way that it says. The article that I read is from CNN, so it kind of hints that it's towards the returning fire, that it was towards from the people returning fire. The sheriff never said that, so I'm not trying to say CNN is the worst thing in the world, but they do tend to lean left. So they could be trying to drive that narrative. So
right.
I always try to be a little cautious when I see things like that.
Yep.
Just like if it was Fox who said it, I'd be like, well, at the same time, Fox tends to lean right. So it could yep. be the opposite. Without what the sheriff said being definitive, I don't think they're really going to find out unless they have cameras and they can see. But all that to say, from the returning fire, they do know that it appears that the original shooter was fatally wounded as well. So with that being said, oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I had tacos tonight and it's giving me burps.
Yeah. You know, the thing is okay. So with gun stores, I'm going to get a little bit of flack for saying this from some people, but I believe if you're going to walk into a gun store, COVID, you know, I don't care about COVID. If you're walking into a gun store, you better not have a mask on.
So, yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. And that's where I think you just have to have capacity limits, right?
Yep.
So that's where, if you're going to keep people safe, just put capacity limits on, ask everyone to stay 6 mm-hmm. feet away. Because in all reality, if you were to do that with every store, you could hypothetically stay safe. You would still have some, you know, whatever
right.
spit from your mouth and, you know, things. I don't disagree with that. If you're walking into a gun store, I think masks need to be off, because most gun stores have security systems and they need to be able to see your face, because if something does happen like this, then yeah.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I even think banks are another place that masks shouldn't be able, just because of the issues of people who try to rob banks, because they mm-hmm. go in masked on purpose. And for somebody to go in masked, it's out of the ordinary, normally pre-COVID, but you know, of mm-hmm. course, COVID makes everything weird. But you know, the right. thing is, and then the second thing is with CNN, you know, like you said, they do tend to lean left. So like when I was reading through this article a little bit, I see what you were kind of talking about, where they kind of try to steer it towards a little bit of the anti-gun, just because they are naturally yeah. more leaning towards that. I mean, But, you know, honestly, the problem I could see being is depending upon how many people were in that gun store, how many people
Oh yeah.
returned fire.
Oh
Like,
yeah.
I
For
mean,
sure.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely a big thing, like depending on how many people are in this gun store. And I mean, come on, you don't walk into a gun store and just assume you're going to be able to open fire and walk out of a gun store.
Right.
I have no doubt in my mind that this guy knew what he was doing, knew that there was not much of a chance that he was going to walk out alive. I'd be curious to know, like, was there history of mental distress? Was there
Right.
a history of all this stuff? And see, that's where this is where I think you and I kind of get into a little bit of an disagreement at times. Is I'm all for if you have if you have issues that would make you unfit mentally to carry a gun, I don't think you should be allowed to buy one. If you've shown history of suicide in the past, why would I assist you in committing suicide? Why would I let you own a firearm?
Right. So there's a fine line between that, though. That's saying that somebody can never change. That's saying somebody can never be redeemed.
That's
And
not what I'm saying.
no. But by that logic, if you pull
No.
that out to its logical conclusion, okay, for instance, if I decide to go in and I'm in a very bad place, I'm hopped up on drugs, and I decide to go in and rob a gas station. Not no gun, no whatever, if I just do it by knife point or something like that, and then I get my life on track. Right now, because it's a felony, I wouldn't be able to have it. I believe that as long as I can prove that I have my life on track and I am not a violent citizen and I have been rehabilitated, there should be no reason that anybody should stand in my way.
How do you prove it?
How do you disprove it?
Well, you robbed the liquor store or the gas station in the first place, right?
But
If
how can
that.
you disprove that I have changed and been rehabilitated? Through whatever programs you make me go through, or whatever you want me to make yourself feel better, that, you know, I've gone through all of these things. What program, like, what disproves that I haven't been rehabilitated? That's like saying guilty until proven innocent.
No. See, because what you're saying is you were guilty the first time, right? So you're
Correct.
saying you're guilty of
Correct.
the gas station robbery.
And
So
you.
now what we're saying is that because you chose to break the law in the first place, we're now going to prevent you from committing more or escalating your life of crime, hypothetically. Again, I'm going to touch on that. Give me just a second before we jump in there, okay? We're stopping you from hypothetically escalating your life of crime by preventing you from legally owning a gun. Now, that doesn't mean if you're going to, advance or escalate your crimes or whatever, you're not going to find a way to illegally own one. That's besides the point. What I am saying is that when you make that choice, you're choosing to give up your right to own a firearm. With that in mind, how do you prove that you've been rehabilitated? Because I can point back to this one moment where, and look, this is me as a pastor. I think Jesus can save everybody. Jesus can take care of all that. But we as people also need to remember that we've got to do what's best for our society within a reasonable stance, right? So if someone's coming after us with, or someone is robbing liquor stores, clearly they don't have regard for the law.
Right. Okay. But so the thing is that is still guilty until proven innocent.
How is that guilty till proven innocent?
Because the thing is, if I have gone through the rehabilitation, okay, you are telling me that I have to prove, I have to show some way and prove, which is not possible unless you give me the chance to prove myself. It's not possible unless given the chance. And the thing is if you don't give me the chance, I can never prove myself. But I can't prove myself until you give me the chance. So you have me stuck at the point where I'm screwed no matter what I do. And no, so the thing is, no, I've gone through all the rehabilitation and everything. And then I'm stuck because I want to prove to you that I can do this. I want to prove to you that I've been rehabilitated.
Define the rehabilitation, though, for me.
So, for instance, I'm not saying our criminal justice system does do any rehabilitation, because that's a whole other can of worms. Yes, that's a whole other can of worms. But what I'm saying, in a perfect world, if somebody has been rehabilitated to the point where they have learned things like managing their anger, for instance, or maybe it was a drug problem and the drugs were talking and the drugs are what drove them to do that because they were addicted to those drugs, which made them want that money, which caused them the cycle. So if I could show, for instance, I've gone through rehab at that point, I've gone through whatever, you know, all hypothetically, you know, I've done all of these things. And then now you're still telling me you're guilty. You can't own, you can't own Jack. Yeah. I'll definitely have to do some editing on this one, so it's all good. Pastor's over there laughing at Redneck because Redneck's getting a little, you know, on a rant and roll here, and yeah. Redneck's got to do some bleeping this episode apparently.
Redneck needs to watch his mouth. So I knew this would get you excited because here's the deal. Like, I understand where you're coming from, okay? I understand that you're saying that in the system we currently have, even though people are quote-unquote rehabilitated, that they, after they're quote-unquote rehabilitated, that they don't have, that they're essentially guilty for that one thing they did for the rest of their lives.
Right.
Do you think that's fair? No. Do I think that's a choice you chose for yourself? Yes. Because it's exactly like, for instance, if you choose, as you're young and dumb, to get a tattoo, that's a choice you made for yourself.
Right.
That, well, yes, they have laser surgeries that can remove it, but it's never going to remove it completely. So that's just a little example, right?
Right.
You're young and dumb, and you end up hurting somebody, like... I don't know, man. I'm telling you.
I can see, like, so there's a difference between, like, if you hurt somebody and if you just rob. I mean, it's all bad. No. Listen to me. Because, because hurting somebody, you are not taking that person's life or, because a life cannot be replaced.
Right.
Things can. Well, I would rather, I would rather somebody steal something from me than hold me at gunpoint or harm myself or anybody I love.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, but what I'm saying is that that theft can cause people extreme hardships at certain points, depending on what the theft is, right?
Right.
So if I'm running a store and you come up and take all the money out of the cash register, at that point, like, you've just taken food out of my children's mouths, right?
Right.
So when people are doing things like that, my question is to you, even if they are quote unquote rehabilitated, mm-hmm. how do we prove not only to the people, to the law, mm-hmm. but how do we even prove to that person that they're rehabilitated enough to own a gun? Because look, I'm not trying to continue this point too crazy much, but what I am saying is that we need to, if we were going to let these people have a second chance at gun ownership, then we'd have to have some kind of definitive way to prove that they're rehabilitated. And these psychological tests, yes, they can do great things, mm-hmm. but it's also very easy for sociopaths and psychopaths to fake it. it's also really easy for people to try and sway these tests the way they want them to. So that wouldn't be a good answer.
Yeah. And so it's also kind of one of those hard things, because one of my other issues is because, yeah, you're only preventing the people who would go the legal route to obtain a gun anyways. When you prevent these people who have committed crimes previously and they try to purchase a gun legally, after the fact, all you're doing is preventing somebody who at that point has then been rehabilitated to the point where they want to do things the legal route. Somebody who is going to be a criminal is going to be a criminal and get a gun no matter what. The thing is all you do by enacting any sort of gun law, any sort of gun control, any sort of, you know, anything like that, is take it out of the hands of law-abiding citizens. You're not you think Johnny from the block down the street who owns, you know, his whatever gun and has his serial number filed off and it is gangbanging around whatever his hood is going to go turn in his gun? No, it's going to be, you know, Timmy who's down the street who bought his gun to protect himself from Johnny, who is going to be the one who is going to be giving his gun because he's the one who has it legally registered. He has it. So all you're doing is preventing these people who would legally go about it from obtaining something. And you would, if they went about it legally, you would know that they owned it because of all of the current laws, all the background checks, all of that. And that the person, they would have knowledge and it would be known that they own the weapon, so it would be able to be traced back to them. The thing is the people who are going to get the guns illegally are going to obtain them illegally no matter what.
So I don't disagree with that, but my point isn't necessarily that. So in our hypothetical that we keep going back to, right? Mm-hmm. Of this person who's robbed the, you said gas station, I think.
Whatever it is.
Who's robbed it and lost their right to own the gun. You also have that those people who are going to play the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
To where they're quote unquote rehabilitated to the point of where they can just purchase the gun legally now. And we're going to move on. Well, because I own the gun legally, but I'm going to hurt people with it now because I've played the system.
Right.
And I don't think there's a good answer to fix this. I think really what we're talking about here is that, and let me first say, I don't think the government should control what guns we can purchase. I don't think the government should control a lot of things, because the whole point of gun ownership in the Second Amendment is that we have the right to own weapons in case we would need to essentially rise up against our government. So our government controlling what we can and can't own as private citizens prevents us from being able to do that. With all that being said, I think what we're losing sight over, what we're losing sight of, is that on some levels, like, in order to protect our society, in order to protect people from sometimes themselves, we have to take that right away.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my big issue I see with a lot of it, and we've kind of gone away from the original story, but we knew we kind of knew we would get into this. You know, the thing is my biggest issue with it becomes the fact that you are the owner of yourself. And the thing is I have whatever rights to own whatever I want to own. Nobody should be able to tell me what I can do with my body. Nobody should be able to tell me what I can own and have on my property. The thing is I believe as somebody, I honestly lean on the, I'll say it, people are going to probably think I'm crazy, but I lean on the anarcho-capitalist side, almost to the anarchist side, you know? And like I said, people think I'm crazy, and I know you're shaking your head over at me. But the thing is honestly, when the governments get too big, they end up enacting way too many laws, and it doesn't ever affect what they expect it to affect. It only ends up hurting the people that they want to help.
So yeah, I mean, I definitely don't disagree with that, because I mean, you look at Chicago, it's a prime example of this, right? So Chicago is one of the cities with like the toughest gun laws. Matter of fact, the state of Illinois has some really tough gun laws.
Well,
Go
yeah.
to go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, just if you have a, for instance, living in the state of Iowa here, if I wanted to drive through Illinois, if I have a concealed carry permit in Iowa, to be able to drive through Illinois, I have to take my concealed carry off of me, put it in a case, lock it, put my ammo separate, lock it, and then drive through the state of Illinois. And then once I get out of the state, and if I'm going straight through into Indiana, the second I drive into Indiana, I can go back to my trunk, put my gun back in my holster, and put it back in my pants.
Yeah. So, I understand what you're saying. And I agree. Chicago, the state of Illinois is very tough. For instance, I live in Illinois and I am a gun owner, but with all that being said, you have to register with the state of Illinois. You have to get what's called a FOID card, which I believe is a firearms identification card. So essentially, the state police know you own a weapon. And once you do that, then you have to go back and you also have to, I believe, register your weapon, your serial number, all that with the state. So when I first moved here, I didn't even have my gun with me for the first, oh gosh, it was probably about a year before I took my gun from my parents who live in Iowa, because I didn't have all that stuff and I wasn't gonna risk it.
Yeah, and see, that's one reason for myself. I could never live in Illinois. Illinois is one of those states that it's almost with that. It's scary how much they have to have the information, because when you look at other states and stuff that have it, for instance, Iowa. Iowa, for as long as you have your permit to purchase, you can purchase and are 21 years of age, you can purchase a handgun, or 18 years of age, you can purchase a long gun. And then once you've filled out the background check and passed all of that, you can literally, you're good. It's yours. You're done. You know, and that's the way, honestly. I don't even think, I'm not saying background checks are a bad thing. I'm not one of those people who are against background checks, because I think that as somebody, if I have a record, like a rap sheet of being a violent individual, and that's on my background check, okay, yeah. Maybe that might not be the greatest idea if someone has proven time and time again to be a violent individual. But the problem is people make mistakes. You can't tell me that one mistake should ruin your whole life.
No, I don't necessarily think that one mistake should ruin your whole life. What I am saying is that sometimes when you make decisions, you just have to live with the fact that you've made a poor decision. Whether it's fair or not to you have to live with that. But with that being said, do I think that people who show signs of mental instability should be allowed to own weapons? I don't know. And the only reason I'm saying that is you could be putting a handgun or a automatic weapon into the hands of the person who's going to be the next mass shooter. Do I think it would be harmful to have a database of the guns? So I mean, that we already have a database of the guns sold. The serial numbers go back and they can trace you, and there are things that they have in place that are meant to help. I don't know. I don't know the right answer to this, but what I can say is that even with all of that, even with all that, I still maintain, especially when it comes to mental instability, I still don't know if I would put weapons in the hands of someone who has proven themselves to be unstable or unfit to own a firearm.
Right. No, and I see exactly where you're coming from, and I can understand what you're saying. Like I said, my big issue is I draw the line at somebody, you know, taking ownership of somebody else, because when you take rights away from somebody else, you are saying I am over you and I have every right to tell you what you can and can't do with your life. At that point, that's an overreach, because you are not, you know, like, yes, you did something bad and you should have to answer for that. Yes. Maybe you shouldn't be able to own a gun for a while, but should it be permanent? I think if you can prove that, you know, otherwise, no, it shouldn't.
My son is 1.5 years old and I'm constantly telling him not to put his finger in the outlet.
I mean, yeah, that's... Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, you know, there's
and we've taken precautions. We got these things that you plug into the outlet that keep them from doing it. You know, the safety plugs. We have those in the things, but we're still constantly telling them not to play with it. We don't get used to it. So I'm telling you, like, the same logic can be applied to what you're saying.
Yeah.
My son is 1.5. He should be able to, I don't have ownership over my son.
Well,
see, should I let him play with the outlet?
That's a little bit of a gray area, because there's a difference. I'm saying, as somebody who is a functioning adult, somebody who can logically make decisions for themselves and doesn't need somebody else to feed and bathe them.
And feed himself.
Can he bathe himself? Yeah, exactly.
Well, you got me there.
Yeah, anyway. You know, and the thing is I it's a sad situation, but the thing is. when you look at Louisiana, Louisiana for their carry laws, this dude should have known better than going into a gun store. Because they have concealed carry. You have to have a permit from the state. Okay. But they also, as long as you are 18 years of age, you can legally possess a firearm and you can open carry without a permit in the state of Louisiana.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
And look, I'm like, I'm all for concealed carry as well. Like, that doesn't... I like I said, I'm more concerned about, like, the mental health of people.
Yeah.
That's more along the lines of, I think, where we disagree a lot of times when it comes to gun control. I'm not for the people limiting what we can carry and what we can't. But,
right.
Well, anyway, and it's
funny because it'll never. That's one thing. People are always so worried about. You know, they're gonna take all of the guns away. They're gonna do it in America. I just looked up the statistics. American citizens are estimated to own 393 million guns.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't surprise me at all. But all that to say, this is a really sad story. I pray for the families that lost.
Yes.
I pray for the people who lost family members in this incident. And I hope the two that were injured in this heal quickly. And the person that thought it'd be smart to... open fire. Well, I guess he learned the lesson that he can't unlearn. So,
yeah.
Well, all that to say, I need something funny. So let's go on to the Florida man moment here. And I wanted to read exactly what my title is for today's Florida man moment, because you can ask Redneck. I was cracking myself up over here. And today's Florida man moment is titled "Florida Man Goes Ham for Beer," and it'll explain itself why I thought I was hilarious here in a couple minutes. So, there's a gentleman, a 35-year-old, who attacked a gas station clerk with hot dogs, and ended up poking this female clerk with a corn dog stick in the face, all because she would not sell him beer. The person was detained and is currently back in prison, or back in jail, excuse me, because for battery, or excuse me, because he was charged with battery, touch, or strike, but he also violated his probation.
So, oh, jeez. That's...
Yeah.
If you know, I'm going to have... I just, when we watched this video together earlier, yeah, and the video, you can just see this dude getting really animated and just angry at whatever, like just because this lady, and you could see that he was finishing eating this corn dog as he's screaming at this lady and then pokes her in the face with it.
Oh, it's so bad. And then like, I'm sitting here like, oh my gosh, this dude is nuts. But anyway, so that's why today's Florida Man moment was Florida Man goes ham for beer. Ham for beer.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna definitely. While we were talking there, I was working on posting that on our Facebook page for our listeners here, because that video for reference is gonna be needed. Yeah. You know, it's
It's really funny. You should go watch it. It's not funny that someone got poked in the face with a hot dog or a corn dog stick, because I'm sure that hurt. Like, it did not look like he went soft either.
No. He definitely poked her in the face pretty hard. I would be upset.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'd be mad too.
I would not be happy.
Honestly, I think I'd be more mad that I got poked in the face with a hot dog stick, but yeah, I would not be happy.
Yeah. Well, from hot dog sticks, I don't really have a good segue, but to aliens.
I mean, everyone knows aliens gave us corn dogs and hot dogs. Come on, man. How else do you think we learned to use pork like that?
Oh man. Woo, that's leaning towards the probing a little too much there. Oh man. So
I'm sorry. I'm still stuck at the leaning towards the probing there. Oh gosh. All right. Go ahead and go with your conspiracy there. Oh, my goodness.
So this article comes from The Observer, and it was talking about, there is one of the lead researchers, and he's actually with, school is it? Harvard. He is the chair of the Harvard University's astronomy department. His name is Avi Loeb. He was talking in this article about whether or not we're alone in this universe, and whether or not, you know, he thinks that there's any sort of intelligent life out there, and stuff like that. And one of the things that he said that he believes is a good indicator that there are other life forms out there is on October 19th, 2017, the Pan-STARRS 1 telescope in Hawaii detected something strange in the sky. And it was an object traveling 4 times the average speed of an asteroid and moving in a trajectory unbound by the sun's gravitational force. Observation data later revealed that the object came from the direction of Vega, a nearby star 25 light years away from Earth, and intercepted our solar system's orbital plane in early September. And it made its closest approach to the sun on September 9th, and October 7th, it shot by the Earth at the speed of nearly 60,000 miles per hour, moving towards the constellation Pegasus and then to the blackness beyond that. Astronomers had never seen anything like this before based on its unusual speed and trajectory. They concluded that it must be an interstellar object, and it became known as a Oumuamua, meaning scout in Hawaiian.
So that's really interesting. Also, fun fact, October 19th is my birthday.
That was another reason when I saw that I had to say something, because on October 2017, on your birthday, the aliens were coming back for you.
Oh, they were.
Yes.
They were coming back for me. Yeah. They were coming back to give me new ways of making corn dogs.
And then they heard Redneck was somewhere in the general vicinity, and then they decided to reroute.
That's right. They went, he's only like 400 miles away. We should get out of here.
Yeah, who knows with those rednecks. They have ways of going, yee-haw! And coming out of nowhere.
We might end up being ridden for like 8 seconds or something here.
Right. See, that's where the probes come in.
Oh no. No.
Oh man.
Tonight's episode has went down a dark path, man. Lord forgive us. Well, I'm going to go on to saving humanity from that. I just found this story to be really cool. There was a lady in Chicago who, after 50 years of missing her wedding band, had it shipped back to her and got it back on Valentine's Day. So for all of our people out there who are married, you know your wedding band is something that's pretty special.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool. This lady in the article gives a little bit of story background, essentially saying it was a snowy day in Chicago. She was trying to help the kids and people in the car, and wasn't wearing gloves, lost her ring in the snow.
Yep.
Was a little sad about it because, you know, figured she'd never see it again.
Right.
Which, if you're from Chicago or from anywhere in the northern United States,
yeah,
when you drop something in snow, until it melts, you don't see it. And if it's in the street, then
yeah,
you're probably not seeing it again.
And the thing is with something like that, with a ring, if it melts enough, it'll just wash down with the water.
Yeah.
And then down the drain it goes.
Yep. Well, the article talks about after 50 years, she finally got her wedding ring back just in time for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, so, you know, that's, you know, actually, personally, you know, 50 years, that's a long time for it to just come back. But that's awesome that on Valentine's Day of all day, you know, this Hallmark romance holiday, it comes back. But, you know, the thing is I know for myself, we were going on a trip one time, my wife and I had lost a bunch of weight. And so my wedding band didn't fit well anymore. And like, I still have my original wedding band, but I can't wear it anymore. And I was up on a ladder and it was snowy out and I didn't have gloves on and I was doing stuff and it slipped off my finger. And luckily I had a friend with a really, really, really bright flashlight that caught a glimpse of the shine in the snow. And it took us a week before we finally found it. And so I couldn't imagine after 50 years finally finding something. That would be such a heartwarming story.
Yeah, no, it's really great, and that would make you so happy. I mean, you gotta imagine this lady sitting around with her grandkids and her kids, and maybe her great grandkids, who knows, and telling them the story of how she lost her wedding band, and now all of a sudden it's back, and it's this special thing to remind you of back when we were young and getting married, you know. So I thought it was really cool. So
definitely, yeah.
That's I think all we have for tonight. What do you want to say to the people tonight, Redneck?
You know, just you know, stay warm out there with all the coldness going on in the United States here, and stay safe with everything going on in the world, all the craziness going on around everybody, and, you know, just the usual spiel I've got for, you know, go ahead and go over to all the podcatchers and find us on all that, and like and subscribe us, and if you like what we're doing, and, you know, go ahead and go like us on Facebook and share us with your friends and family if you like what we're doing. You know, we're not, you know, out here trying to push ourselves too much, but if you like us and like what we have to say, share us, and, you know, maybe somebody else can get something out of the few of us on here rambling.
Yeah. If you heard anything tonight that you disagree with, or anything you agree with, or any ideas for stories, shoot us an email at beardedbanterpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And with that being said, good night from the pastor.
Sayonara from the redneck.